Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of Sports Urban Legend. Along with my co-host Macaulay Matthew, I'm of course William Amo. What's up, Mac? How you doing?
Hey, man. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, man. But I'm hearing my echo, but I'm ignoring it. But thanks for coming on the show, as always.
Yeah, no, anytime.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm always happy to have you guys on the show, as always. And if you'd like to talk about any of these upcoming topics or more, feel free to let your voice be heard. On today's show, you know, I'm going to give my my thoughts on the Michael Jordan documentary that just ended on Sunday, this past Sunday. And I'm also going to talk about, you know, the AEW pay-per-view event that should be finishing by now. AEW Double or Nothing. Talk about that. Talk about what's going on in WWE. And what else is going on in the world of sports, you know, during this quarantine. But, you know, again, most importantly, number is 563-999-3529. That's 563-999-3529. So feel free to talk about any of these topics or more. You know, we're here for you. But before we dive into the last dance talk, and, you know, our brutally honest take on this, you know, 10-episode series. First thing we got, you know, we got to talk about, you know, is the unfortunate and untimely passing of, you know, a fan favorite, you know, former WWE superstar, you know, a fan, you know, of, you know, me and you, Mac, of course. And I'm, of course, talking about, you know, the passing of Shad Gaspar, you know, from Crime Time. And basically, you know, a few days ago, Shad Gaspar was playing with his son, and, you know, he got caught with a riptide, but his last act was that he told the lifeguard to protect his son, and apparently the next thing the lifeguard noticed, or the, you know, was him gone. So they were searching for days for him, and I think it was probably Thursday or Friday, I can't remember. Sometime this week, they, you know, unfortunately confirmed that he did pass away when they found, you know, his body, you know, and
well, I'm hearing an echo in the background.
Oh, yeah, you hear the echo too?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I thought it was just me. I thought it was just me, unfortunately, but hopefully the listeners don't hear it, but I'm guessing if you hear it and I hear it, then unfortunately, you know, they hear it too. So I apologize for that technical difficulty. But, you know, most importantly, you know, my thoughts and prayer, you know, goes out to, you know, the Gaspar family. You know, he was a, you know, a very good dude from all the accounts I've heard, you know. And, you know, he went out like a true hero, you know, protecting his son, you know, like a real father would. And a few years ago, he stopped an armed robbery, which is ironic because his whole character with his whole gimmick with JTG was that, you know, they're stereotypical, you know, criminals, you know, from the street of Brooklyn, robbing people. But the only thing that the Crime Time, you know, really stole, since unfortunately they never got the title, the tag team titles during their reign, was the only thing they stole was the heart of the fans and how they engage, you know, the audience with their antics, their hilarious skits. And, you know, for someone who I guess didn't watch them in, you know, in the past decade or so, the best way to describe them was like, they were like a cross between Eddie Guerrero, you know, his, you know, Latino Heat, like cheat and steal character, and the New Day, which, you know, they were, the New Day, especially Kofi Kingston, were very cool with him. So, you know, that's the best way to describe those guys. Very, very hilarious, very entertaining, and, you know, Shad's definitely going to be missed, not only for the entertainer that he was, but, you know, for the stand-up guy he was. And, you know, the highest praise you could give is, you know, his peers and, you know, his former, you know, co-workers like Undertaker, you know, The Rock, Kofi Kingston, and the list goes on and on. Even Josh Brolin, you know, the actor, he paid his respect, you know, to Shad. So, you know, he's definitely going to be missed. What's your thoughts on the whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, when I heard about it, you know, I was shocked, you know. Shocked for two things. Shocked because, you know, during this pandemic, people are going to the beach right now and going to the water. I mean, you guys have to be more aware and more cautious right now. You know, you should stay away from the beaches or stay away from anything right now until this COVID-19 improves. But I was shocked for that, and of course shocked, you know, because he was caught in this riptide, and fortunately his son was saved, but he ended up drowning, and they ended up finding his body several days later. So, I mean, this is shocking all around, but, you know, it's very tragic, very sad. And, you know, my condolences go out to his family and to his son. But, you know, he died a hero. You know, he sacrificed his life to save his son's life. And, you know, and also, as you mentioned, he stopped the robbery. So this guy, you know, he was not a criminal as his character was portrayed in as he portrayed in the, you know, WWE. When he was tag teaming with JTG at Crime Time, this guy was a real life hero, and you have to commend him for that. And, you know, rest in peace. You know, that's all I can say.
Yeah, man, absolutely. You know, those guys were money on the mic, man. And, you know, but even more importantly, you know, Chad was a good dude, and, you know, he definitely earned the respect of the, you know, the people that knew him the most during his lifetime. And, you know, everybody's all, you know, coming out and, you know, giving him the respect that he deserved as a human being. And no one's ever had anything bad to say about him. And that was prior to his passing. So, you know, rest in peace, Chad Gaspar. And, you know, in tribute, you know, I'm gonna play his theme song, you know, to give props to a fellow Haitian, you know, a guy of Haitian descent, like, you know, both of us. So, you know, rest in peace, Chad Gaspar. I'm Yeah, man. Rest in peace, man.
Rest in peace, indeed.
But yeah, man. Let's you know, shift gear. Well, I guess slightly shift gears. There was another tragedy in the wrestling world too. But this news I think basically came out earlier today. Yeah, there was this Japanese star called Hana Kimura. She passed away at the age of 22 because allegedly, you know, she committed suicide because she was facing cyberbullying. So, I mean, that's another horrible and tragic, you know, story. And apparently she was, before she passed away, before, you know, she took her life, she was posting cryptic messages about how she was feeling. But, you know, my thoughts and prayers go out to her family. I mean, that's messed up. What's your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, no, it's definitely sad. I mean, it looks like she was being bullied online by people, and she decided to take her life because of it. My question is, I mean, if you're being bullied online, can't you just log off? I mean, let's be fair here, you know? But it could have been some other things that was going on in her life, which, you know, led to her committing suicide. But, you know, sad. But, you know, and she sounds like she, you know, was a rising superstar as well. Could have possibly been the next Asuka.
Yeah, apparently she's been wrestling since she was 6, and apparently she won a championship in Japan, and then she, I guess moments later, got defeated by her own mother, you know. But you're back, Mac?
Yeah, I got this. Don't know what happened there.
Yeah,
but
I noticed you got cut off for some reason. But, yeah, apparently she won her first title when she was 6, and then moments later she got, you know, defeated by her mother, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's sad. You know, she was a wrestling lifer.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, you know, whatever, you know, issues she was dealing with, you know, I mean, with the addition or as a result of being bullied, you know, she ended it all. You know,
yeah,
it's sad.
It's very sad. Fortunately, only 20, I think she was 23,
22,
I think.
Or something
22.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, my thoughts and prayers go out to her family. It's, I mean, I can't even imagine going on. But moving on to, you know, more, I mean, less depressing news. Let's just dive into let's just dive right into this The Last Dance talk. And I definitely have to, you know, thank you, man, because I was not gonna originally watch this series because, you know, I lived it, you know, as a child, you know, in the 90s. Team I ever rooted for was the Knicks. I mean, this was years before I was a Mets fan or even a wrestling fan. You know, Knicks was the only thing I cared about sports wise. So, you know, I remember all the heartaches that the Knicks put me through as a result of Jordan's dominance. So I didn't know if I wanted to relive it, but, you know, I always love nostalgic stuff, especially sports and entertainment wise. You know, as you guys know, if you know, you check out this show for the past 11 years and the YouTube channel, Sports Urban Legend TV. you know, you guys know that I love old school stuff like this. So, you know, I took a chance, and from the first episode on, you knew ESPN was bringing it, man. It was great. I loved the you know, how they paralleled the whole season, like the perfect storm of 98, you know, of the Last Dance, all the background, the backstage politics and all the stuff going on in the background and in the forefront while Jordan's trying to chase his sixth and final championship of his career and of the Bulls franchise career also. And they basically flash back to the earlier Bulls days, how they were in laughing stock of the league, you know, Pippen's getting drafted and his emergence with the team. Of course, it talks about Kerr, Rodman. You know, they talked about the key Bulls and including the former Knicks player on the championship teams, Phil Jackson. You know, coaching that team. And my thoughts on it, man, it was a great documentary. And the reason why it was great was because all the players, you know, everybody who was interviewed, especially Jordan, they didn't hold back, you know, with their honest opinions. So, I mean, because of that, I mean, it was a phenomenal documentary. I mean, for me, gets a perfect 10 because, I mean, there was nothing they could have done that could have made this, you know, perfect. I mean, the only thing that would have been perfect is if, you know, there was an alternate universe where the Knicks actually won a championship during the 90s. I mean, that's the only way I would have loved it even more. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. So to everybody involved, I mean, it was great. I mean, what was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was a great documentary. I mean, throughout, every episode kept you on edge, you know, from the early days of the Bulls to the first three championships and Michael Jordan, you know, his early days and him growing up and him signing with Nike all the way up to the 98 season, you know, everything about it was great, you know, even like the backstage politics stuff you mentioned, all the controversies they had to endure. It was every episode was fantastic, man. It was well shot, well planned, and just having Jordan give you the commentary on everything that was going on throughout that season, I definitely think it, you know, helped the documentary. Boosted it up to another level. But I'm hearing now that Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant, they're not too thrilled after seeing this documentary, how they were portrayed, you know, in some of these episodes. So, you know, I don't know what was true, what's not true, but all I could say is after watching this documentary, you know, it's definitely one of the better documentaries I've seen in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I also talk about this on an episode on my YouTube channel, Sports Urban Legend TV, you know, about this. But yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember what I was gonna say about this. I'm trying to think of something that stood out in my head. I just lost my train of thought. But it was a phenomenal thing. I mean, darn, I can't. I'm at a loss for words. That's how great the documentary was. But darn, I forgot exactly what I was gonna say. I'm really like tongue tied right now. But I mean, I love the backstage stuff. You know. But what was really messed up about it was how Jerry Krause, I mean, as great as a GM he was, I mean, that was messed up. And Reinsdorf, man, Like, no matter what they did, they can't bring them back for one more year to let them get that title, that go for the seventh. I thought that was pretty dirty.
Oh yeah,
that was one of the things I wanted to touch upon. The other thing I wanted to touch upon was, yeah, man. I mean, it was sad to see Jordan, you know, got emotional, you know, winning that fourth championship, you know, his first championship he won without his father on Father's Day, no less, too. So that was really, I got to admit, I mean, that you know, that got me emotional, too. I felt his pain, you know, him. You know, what it meant to him, you know, winning that first title, and him just, you know, he letting it all hang out, man. He just crying, you know, in the locker room, man. It was, you know, it was sad because he always had his father, you know, consoling him for the first three, and you know, that was basically a tribute to his father for that that fourth one. Well, I mean, what was your thoughts more on this?
Yeah, I mean, that part where, you know, he talked about his dad being his best friend and them giving details of his dad's murder. I mean, that was probably the lowest point of that documentary, you know? Just that, you know, talking, them diving into that part. Yeah, I mean, that was probably the worst part of that documentary.
Yeah.
Just his dad's death, you know. But other than that, you know, the championships, you know, diving deep into Jordan's mind and how ferocious of a athlete he was and how,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was so committed, you know, to the game of basketball, you know, and so competitive also.
Mm-hmm.
Even
mm-hmm.
when he wasn't playing basketball, he was competitive at, you know, card playing and golf,
mm-hmm.
you know. This
mm-hmm.
guy was just born to be competitive.
Yep.
And you see that throughout the documentary. And, you know, that's why, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, you know, because this guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, unlike some other athletes, he strives to be the best at
mm-hmm.
his sport, you know?
Yeah.
And he's done that. And you see that throughout, you know, these episodes, you know, especially that game where he was battling that food poisoning. And all these years we thought it was the flu, but it wasn't. But he managed to play through that. And I think he scored, what, like 42 points or something? I think
something
in that game.
Like that.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. When I have food poisoning, I can't even get out of bed, you know? And these dudes play shooting jump shots and dunking. I mean, this guy's superhuman.
It's crazy. And you know what the funny thing is? I just before you mentioned it, it just popped in my head about the flu game. But yeah, you're 100% right. You know, like we all thought it was the flu, but it was food poisoning. And then another moment where he was sick or you know, he was out of it was the double nickel game when he was four games back from the NBA from playing you know, minor league baseball. You know, with
right.
the with the Barons, you know, the White Sox affiliate. And
right.
Yeah, man, before that the first three or four games before he played the Knicks, you know, he looked pedestrian. You know, he looked like a imposter, you know, wearing a Jordan jersey, you know. And, of
yeah.
course, you know, his number was 45 when he came back, and then he switched it right back to 23. And, yeah, man, he's unbelievable, man.
He's Black Jesus.
I'm not going that far. If you want to go there, that's on.
Well,
you,
that's what they said in the.
Oh yeah, the LeBron James interview.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you Yeah, you were telling me about the LeBron James interview, where basically, you know, he grew up a Chicago Bulls fan, because, you know, LeBron James, you know, he's, when it comes to being a sports fan in the 90s, he was the anti-Will, because he rooted for the Yankees, that won four in that time. He rooted for the Cowboys, America's team, and then of course he was a Bulls fan, you know. So, I mean, he didn't have a lot of heartbreak watching sports like yours truly. But he was talking about the first time he met him, when you know, this was just maybe 2 years before he made it to the league. You know, he made to the NBA. I think this was also Jordan's last year too, when he was playing with the Wizards. But yeah, he talked about how, you know, he felt like Jordan was a mythological creature. He only saw him on TV, and he referred to him as Black Jesus, because he felt he was literally his idol. So he told a story about that. But all in all, man, this was a great documentary. And for me, one of the episodes when they touched upon Kobe Bryant, you know, playing his first game in the MSG at the All-Star game, and they really dived in deep into, you know, Michael's, you know, deep respect and brother, big brother, little brother relationship he had with Kobe. I mean, the way how they set that up, man, I was like, man, this is a potential spinoff, you know, episode that they could have. Because, you know, Kobe, like I've always said, man, for the past probably 20 years or so, Kobe is the closest thing to Michael Jordan, you know, that we've seen as a player. I mean, LeBron's great. You know, he's on that level as well. But, yeah, man, Kobe, man, that's a spinoff episode right there, a ten-part episode or so, or maybe close to it, of what you could do.
Well,
that.
I hear that the Magic Johnson has confirmed that they are going to be releasing a Kobe documentary soon here, focusing on his last season. So that's currently in the works.
That's great. I mean, that's much watch right there. And I also heard that ESPN is going to do Tom Brady one. I mean, that one's going to be good, but, you know, I'm keeping it real with you. It's not going to be as great as Jordan one, because Jordan one, I don't know if Tom Brady's going to go, you know, like, he's still playing in the league. I don't know if he's going to, you know, be like, keep it 100, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Tom Brady isn't on Michael Jordan's level either. You know, Michael Jordan was the most dominant athlete during his era. Can you say the same for Brady? I mean, maybe Brady's team have been the most dominant team during his era, but I think there's been better players during Brady's era than Tom Brady, so.
Right. I mean, they do have the winning resume, but yeah, I mean, I feel your point.
Well, yeah, Patriots. That's what I'm saying. The Patriots have been the dominant team during the era, but Brady himself has not been the most dominant player during his era. There's been other players that have been much better.
Right, statistically. I agree with that. But, I definitely, you know, can't wait to see any of those documentaries. But, again,
yeah.
A perfect 10 out of 10 for me in this documentary. What 0 to 10, what would you rate this? I know it ain't a 0.
It's definitely 10.
Well, there you have it. From two Knicks fans who miraculously haven't had any therapy bills, you know, haven't went to therapy yet due to the trauma Jordan and the Chicago Bullies have done to the Knicks over that era. But, you know, take it from us, guys who actually lived the era as kids. Check it out. ESPN should be paying us for this, you know. But, you know, this is, you know, it is what it is, man. This is a great documentary. You know, go see it. But, yeah, let's shift gears. And, yeah, NBA, man, they're trying to come back. They're trying to resume this season. And the rumor is that they might play the seasons in Disneyland. I mean, Disney World,
yeah,
I think.
Heard about that.
And, you know, same thing with MLB. They're trying to come up with a deal, I think, early next month to try to, you know, start the season late. Oh, well, start the season around July, the fourth weekend. Like July 3rd is the tentative date I heard about. And former Yankee Bartolo Colon, he wants to come back one more year, but you know, play for the Mets. So I don't know if he's gonna come out of the bullpen or whatnot, or if they're gonna sign him. But it would be nice to see him, you know, have his last hurrah as a Met, you know. Fan favorite, you know, he had his first home run, became like the oldest pitcher to hit a home run, you know, which MLB and McCauley don't want pitchers to hit, you know, bat. So that, I guess his record's going to be intact.
Bartolo Colon should just hang it up, man. I mean, you want him coming back for a final year?
I mean, if he wants to come back and come out of the bullpen and he still has a little sign in the tank, I mean, as long as he doesn't hurt the team and he doesn't pitch, I mean, he comes out of the pen and he doesn't give us the best Edwin Diaz or Jerry's Familia impression from this past year, then, I mean, he can't hurt us, I don't think. I mean, but I guess we'll see if the Mets will sign him or not. Because a few years ago, they were looking for a Bartolo Colon type pitcher, but then they signed Jason Vargas and let, you know, Bartolo Colon leave.
Mm.
But, you know, it is what it is. Most important thing is that, you know, hopefully Luis Rojas, you know, can adjust with his, you know, her first year as manager, and we'll see what happens. You know,
yeah.
Terry Collins, Buck Showalter, you know, they definitely believe in him that he could be a very good manager. But you know, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, in July, if this season does happen, you know, if he does adjust to the game, I mean, he you know, he's a baseball lifer, and he is the son of Felipe Alou, one of the best managers in the game, so hopefully he'll rub off on him. But in any case, yeah, let's shift gears to WWE, man. What's your thoughts on this week? I mean, the highlight of the week for me, other than AJ Styles, you know, getting traded to SmackDown, was the emergence of Bobby Lashley. I mean, Bobby Lashley, you know, he's finally aligned himself with MVP, and looks like now Bobby Lashley, man, he's finally going to, you know, compete for the WWE title, first time since 2008. So hopefully this will lead to him eventually winning the title and set up a eventual Brock Lesnar match. But what's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's looking like that. It's looking like they're giving Lashley a push again, and having MVP manage him now, or be his valet, whatever you want to call him. I mean, this should. If this is the case, why didn't they just keep Rush as his, you know, as his manager, because he was doing a good job promoting Lashley and announcing him when he came in. I mean, I don't know why they let him go. It didn't make no sense.
Yeah, not only did they let him go, but they sent him down to the they put him in NXT where he won the the Cruiserweight title. And then afterwards they took the title off him shortly, and then afterwards, you know, he was released, you know, one of the people released. So
yeah.
I mean, yeah, man, that was a wasted opportunity that they did, you know, releasing him, because he had the wrestling ability and he had the mic skills. I mean, what more did you want from the guy?
Yeah. Don't know why. I mean, he brought Lashley. He made Lashley interesting again.
He did. Other than him, Lashley bending over and sticking his butt out. I mean, other than that, it was a great pairing of those two.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Lashley, he looked like he was finally gonna get a push that he needed. But then afterwards, they made him be King Corbin's lackey, which is what they did with Drew McIntyre also. They formed the unlikely trio where everybody who's more talented than King Corbin becomes his lackeys instead of the other way around. And then they had a mini reunion, the three of them, at the end of Raw, because Drew McIntyre defeated King Corbin with, of course, Claymore kick. And then Bobby Lashley with MVP standing in the entrance, you know, they were watching, and basically Bobby Lashley was challenging him for the title, and Drew McIntyre was voicing the opinions of all the WWE universe, like, this is the Lashley we wanted to see, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah. But unfortunately, Lashley's not going to win the title anytime soon, you know, if ever, because they're going to be pushing Drew McIntyre all the way into, like, WrestleMania, seemingly, or at least until the COVID is over, you know, it's still ongoing. She's not dropping that title anytime soon. I mean, I just don't see it. So, I mean, you know, hopefully Lashley, you know, looks strong and they shock us and put the title on him. But yeah, Drew's going to have the title for a while.
Or maybe send Lashley to SmackDown.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You stole the words right out of my mouth. The only thing that could really help Lashley is if he gets traded to SmackDown. But the problem is AJ Styles got traded to SmackDown. So unless they revealed it was that Lashley and AJ Styles got traded to SmackDown and somebody else, whoever it is, got traded to Raw, then, you know, Lashley's going to have a losing attempt at the title. Because Drew ain't losing the title anytime soon.
Nope.
I mean, Braun Strowman, I mean, you would think, logically speaking, since Braun Strowman is the more physically intimidating, of the two, as compared to Drew McIntyre, you would think it would be easier to defeat Drew McIntyre than Braun Strowman. But yeah, what they're doing to Braun Strowman is ridiculous, man. They don't take that guy seriously. And the only reason why he won the title is because Roman Reigns, you know, decided not to wrestle because he didn't want to get sick. And apparently he has newborn babies, and he didn't want to risk getting sick and them getting sick because of the COVID. So that's why he gave up his opportunity. So, Braun Strowman, his last couple of title matches, with the exception of Bray Wyatt, were handicap matches. He shockingly lost the Intercontinental title in a handicap match to Sami Zayn when Sami Zayn was teaming up with you know, his friends, Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. And then now he's fighting in another handicap match where he's going to be battling Miz and Morrison, the former tag team champions, you know.
When is Roman Reigns coming back? Do we know?
Not anytime soon. No one knows. Nobody knows when he's coming back. I'm guessing until the COVID is over is when he's going to come back. But, yeah, it's, what was I going to say? But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, now that the Intercontinental title is vacant, and now they have a tournament. AJ Styles defeated Nakamura on SmackDown. I think Daniel Bryan defeated Gulak. So, I mean, the way how it looks like we might be seeing a dream matchup of AJ Styles versus Daniel Bryan for the Intercontinental title, you know,
yeah,
in the finals, the way how things are shaping up. I mean, a lot can happen from, what, a few weeks from now, you know,
yeah,
to now.
Yeah.
But that's what it looks like they're setting up for. And that's the perfect way to re-energize and resurrect the Intercontinental title, because you got these two workhorses battling for a title that always been the historically working man's title. And I think it would be a beautiful thing to see those guys battle it out for what was once the second most prestigious title before the WWE, WCW, ECW merger they had in, 2001. So, yeah, that's definitely interesting if it goes down like that. But speaking of, you know, tournaments for a title, and in AEW, they have the pay-per-view event, All or Nothing. I think this was their, what, second annual one? All or Nothing? But, there was a tournament, basically. There's been a tournament going on for weeks. And in the finals, Cody Rhodes with his manager, Arn Anderson, obviously of the Four Horsemen in WCW. Cody Rhodes, he defeated Lance Archer. And, of course, Lance Archer is managed by the legendary Jake the Snake Roberts. And this is the to my knowledge, I think this is the first time Lance Archer was defeated in AEW. But the other newsworthy thing is Mike Tyson presented Cody Rhodes with the inaugural TNT Championship. So congratulations to Cody Rhodes. Oh, well, Cody. He doesn't go by Cody Rhodes anymore, but we all know who he is. But apparently during the match, Jake the Snake Roberts was going to interfere and attack Cody, but Mike Tyson, took off his shirt and he was going to knock out Jake the Snake because, Jake was going to come out with the snake and try to put it on Cody during the match, like Jake the Snake did to Cody's wife, Brandy, a few weeks ago. So, basically, Cody got his revenge, defeated Lance Archer, and he is the new and the first ever AEW TNT champion. So, congratulations to him.
Oh, congrats. I still need to watch AEW because Survivor has ended now, and it comes on at 8 o'clock, right? On Wednesday nights?
Yes. Yeah, same time as NXT.
Okay, yeah, I still need to watch that.
Yeah, so let me try to think. So for the AEW Tag Team Championship, best friends, Taylor and Trent, defeat Private Party, which has Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn. So as a result, best friends are the number one contenders for the AEW World Tag Team Championship. And with the ladder match for the number one contender for the AEW World Championship, Brian Cage, being managed by Taz, he won the casino ladder match, and as a result, he has a future AEW World Championship match in his future. Also, MJF, he defeated Jungle Boy. No surprise there.
This is a person called Jungle Boy?
Yeah, Jungle Boy. And the most shocking thing is that's Luke Perry's real life son.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's the Jungle Boy, Jack Perry. The woman's title. Oh, actually, yeah. This is a singles match because Britt Baker, she got injured. She was supposed to be in that match, I guess, to determine the number one contender. But Chris Statlander, she defeated Penelope Ford in the singles matchup. Dustin Rhodes, he defeated Sean Spears. Sean Spears used to be known as Ty Dillinger when he was in WWE. And then for the AEW Women's World Championship, Nyla Rose, she lost to Haruka Shida, for the women's title. And then also, what was I going to say? For the AEW Championship, Jon Moxley, formerly known as Dean Ambrose, he defeated Brody Lee, formerly known as Luke Harper, from the Wyatt family, to retain the AEW Championship. And basically, for the past couple of weeks, Brody Lee attacked Jon Moxley, and he stole the title, and he was calling himself the AEW champion, even though Moxley never lost the title. So Moxley got his revenge and, you know, has the title in his possession again. So, you know, that's that. And then they have the Stampede match. I forgot the name of that match. Stadium Stampede match, I think it's called. I don't think they have a winner yet for that one yet.
Does AEW, do they have, well, I know they don't have any audience in attendance, but mm-hmm. are they having staff members fill some of those seats?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Unlike WWE, they have wrestlers and staff members, stuff like that, in the audience. And
That's a good idea.
It's a smart idea, you know, that it takes away out of the whole empty arena feeling, you know.
Yeah.
Even though you know it's an empty arena essentially, and you know they're wrestlers, you know supporting their fellow, you know, peers. But yeah, I think it's a wonderful aesthetic to have, but apparently Vince is against it, you know, having the wrestlers, watching in the audience, like fans. Maybe he feels like it degrades them. I don't know. I don't know what the reason is. But
weird.
I don't know. But yeah, WWE would really benefit from having that. You know, having the wrestlers in the ring.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea.
Yeah. But, it's official now. Matt Hardy and the Elite has Adam Page you know, the Hangman, Kenny Omega, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson, they defeat Chris Jericho's Inner Circle. And the Inner Circle has Jake Hager, formerly known as Jack Swagger, Sammy Guevara, Santana, and Ortiz. So Matt Hardy, he got his revenge from, you know, the Jericho and the Inner Circle destroying his drone called Vanguard One. So this was Matt Hardy's first pay-per-view match, you know, since joining AEW. So
really? Wow.
Yeah. So All or Nothing, I mean, I didn't see the thing. I'm just reading the results, but it looks like it, you know, it was interesting to see. So I guess I'll find out more information on, how everything went down. But
it was, it was tonight?
Yeah, it was tonight.
Wow. Why they don't do it on Sundays? That's
I don't know. Maybe they want to differentiate from WWE. You know, WWE does their stuff Saturday, Sundays. I guess they felt like they wanted to do their stuff on.
Yeah, I mean, it is a unique. I mean, it is different from WWE.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that makes them stand out that they do on Saturday nights instead of Sunday nights.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I guess this is the show. You have anything you'd like to say?
Happy Memorial Day, and just be safe and just enjoy this Memorial Day weekend, everyone.
Yep, you heard the guy, man. You know, happy Memorial Day, and you know, remember the people who. The men and women who gave their life for this country, you know, so for us to have our freedom. So, you know, just remember them, you know, in the families, you know, in your prayers. So, you know, peace out to, you know, shout out to them. But, you know, I want to thank you all, ladies and gentlemen, for checking out this episode. You know, I'll see you guys next week. Please feel free to check out next week's episode, same time, Saturday at 11. And check out my YouTube channel, Sports Urban Legend TV, with some all new episodes. And, you know, see you guys next week. But before I go, in honor of the Bulls and the, you know, that special, here's the theme song that, you know, strike fear in the heart of their opponents during the 90s. So he's Macaulay Matthew. I'm William Ramon, and I'll see you guys next time.
Peace.